All right, welcome on in. Sports360AZ.com. Brad Sussmat with you. We have a busy show ahead. Pedro Gomez will join us, ESPN's national baseball analyst. He is in Pittsburgh today for the Pirates and the Cubs. We'll talk with Pedro. Jake Plummer is going to join us via Skype today, which will be an adventure, from Boulder. We checked in with Jake just to make sure everything's ready to go. He's wearing some hat that old-school Sun Devil fans will really like. I want to talk to him about Miles Jack quitting on the UCLA football program, because I think there's something there to some issues that may be deeper for UCLA. And as we've talked about the cannibalization of the Pac-12 South this year, did UCLA take a real hit by their leader walking away from them yesterday afternoon? And then Michael Fabiano will be with us because your fantasy football team is all screwed up, jacked up. You need your fantasy football advice. The mailbag is loaded up with questions. Still time if you want to join us via on Twitter. Just shoot me one at Brad Sussmat. Your questions for Michael Fabiano from the NFL Network, senior fantasy analyst. Who to start, who to sit, and all that stuff. TV show is tonight. It'll be at 8 o'clock. Lee Steinberg will be with us tonight on the television show. The legendary 40-year sports attorney slash agent. He is coming to the Valley tomorrow. He will be lecturing at the U of A. He'll be lecturing at Grand Canyon. And he'll be lecturing at Arizona State. So Lee is in town. And I've known Lee for a long time. He'll be on the television show tonight. And we'll talk with Lee about becoming an agent. Those of you who are there sitting at work and you hate your job and you want to be involved in sports, Lee goes very deep on that subject. And also the concussion part of things, that's been a passion of Lee's as well. That'll be tonight on the television show on Fox Sports Arizona at 8 o'clock tonight, 8 o'clock, 10 o'clock, and 1 a.m. All right. Some of what's going on here in the middle of the day. And the NFL owners are meeting in New York today as we speak about the Los Angeles franchises and if it will involve St. Louis, Oakland, San Diego, some combination. It sounds as though St. Louis is trying to make a last-minute ditch effort to keep the Rams through all this. Not really sure what's going to come out of this. There's some NFL owners that are not big on Stan Kroenke and being involved in Los Angeles and how would it work having two ownership groups work together with the Chargers and Raiders. Who would have ever thought Chargers and Raiders could work together on anything? Chris Mortensen just tweeted out, this has been a source of irritation with several NFL owners who've been lukewarm or chilly to Kroenke's LA pursuit. Word is, league has accepted Kroenke's cross-ownership plan, meaning he has met the requirements in that regard. So there's a lot going on that front at the NFL meetings. And as the show progresses today, we may jump into that a little bit more. Thought it was interesting what Jim Caldwell, the coach of the Detroit Lions, brought up. They have the Cardinals this Sunday morning. And on the surface, you look at Detroit after their bitter loss at Seattle, a loss that I thought they got screwed on an officiating call at the end of the game that was just horrendous. Anybody says, oh, well, that's just making an excuse. You didn't watch the game. You didn't see what happened. So Jim Caldwell says now he's telling his players not to talk with the media about the batted ball controversy because he wants his team to remain focused on the game against Arizona. Now, I understand that to a certain extent. You have to kind of put that behind you when you face adversity. If all you do is relive that and you don't focus on the team that's coming up. The bottom line is, at 0-4, Detroit, not having won a game, the only team that's winless in the league. Is this a distraction by the coach, Jim Caldwell, by keeping his players silent on an issue that could be a distraction? Is in contrast what happened to the Lions the week before. The week before, Bronco players said they knew what plays were coming in. Golden Tate, the Lions receiver, talked about it last week, saying the opposing players had made similar remarks to him in the first three games of the season. And so he talked about it. It seemed like there was some improvement on that, though watching the Monday night game with Seattle and Detroit, even John Gruden was saying this is going to be a run play. So Jim Caldwell's under some fire. The bottom line for the Cardinals on this is, in the next couple of weeks, they go to Detroit, they go to Pittsburgh, but they have six of their next eight games away from home. Six of eight. And the ones that they have at home are not going to be any picnic in the park, starting with the Ravens on a Monday night. That's not going to be easy. I think Baltimore is getting better and better. So there's some Cardinal stuff that I want to get into as the show moves along today. We'll talk some baseball in a few minutes with Pedro Gomez. Again, he is in Pittsburgh for the Cubs-Pirates game tonight. On the college football front, it's a really interesting weekend that's shaping up. People will say, well, this is not a good weekend for games. Oh, this weekend is really not anything special. And yet every weekend you walk away and say, wow, well, there's some games here. And I think this weekend is no exception. If Arizona State looks past Colorado, Arizona State's going to get beat before they play Utah. We'll talk to Jake Plummer about that here in a few minutes. Utah-Colorado, late night, this will be Jared Goff's toughest challenge. Goff is a Heisman Trophy candidate. Eric and I saw him out at, and we talked to him actually, at a Pac-12 Media Day in August. Very composed, very understated, would rather talk about his teammates rather than himself. Watching Jared Goff play quarterback this year, to me, if I'm going out and I'm drafting an NFL quarterback, this is just me. Let's just say you're the Houston Texans. You stink out loud. You could go draft Christian Hackenberg at Penn State. I don't think he has a whole lot of talent around him. You can draft Jared Goff out of Cal, who's gotten better and better. And those are really the two that I look at. Cody Kessler has guys with a lot of speed, in my opinion. And he can make some of the throws, but I think Jared Goff may be a little bit tougher, and Goff hasn't filled out yet. Goff is going to be a bigger kid. Right now, he's a little undersized. Like, Eric, do you remember when we were at Media Day and Goff sat down next to us? And I don't know about you, but I was thinking, wow, he's a little slight in his frame, but
he is.
The shirt was draped on him.
It was. But he is a really, really good player, regardless of, I mean, like you said, he's going to fill out, but man, that offense can score points quickly.
So, and you've seen Boykin at TCU.
A few thousand times.
How does he, you look at quarterbacks, and some people are talking about him as just a really good college player and Heisman Trophy candidate.
He is a really good college player. He will likely play wide receiver in the NFL, just like Braxton Miller will. Same kind of player. I mean, Goff and Boykin are two completely separate. I mean, one's a dual threat, the other's just a classic tall drop-back pocket passer. But underrated athletically, I think. Goff's a good player, really good player.
And Cardale Jones, I don't think I'd touch him. Myself, I know he's going to come out here and work out from what I'm hearing. He's going to be out here in
that
Arizona.
Situation's just sort of a mess. I mean, it's hard because Ohio State hasn't played anyone, and Ohio State last year struggled against teams that were 500 or below 500. We're not really going to know about Ohio State until it's Michigan State, Michigan towards the end of the year because their schedule, they play no one. Like, they just don't play.
I thought Northern Illinois was pretty good.
Again, right now they're like Mike Tyson in his prime. Like, yeah. They're just not motivated until they meet someone that can stand in the ring and go blow for blow.
There's something that doesn't feel right about that team, though. And if what you're insinuating is they just don't care right now.
They don't care.
Just that they don't care until it's bright lights.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's not a good sign of a team.
But the thing is, they have the national respect in their back pocket. And last year proved, even with one loss, they can make the playoffs. So if they struggle and go undefeated, they're still going to be in the playoffs. And then they can just flip the switch. They have enough talent to flip the switch whenever they want. But, you know, people are saying, oh, well, Indiana's a good team. Well, I mean, Ohio State, you put Ohio State against Indiana on paper, that should not be a 7-10 point game, even in Bloomington.
Well, it's like Illinois is having a good season. They blew Beckman out, and they're having a good season. Indiana, it's like the first time since the 60s that they've been relevant in football at all. But it is the Big Ten, and Northwestern to me is intriguing. If Northwestern beats Stanford, I can't just say that was luck and it was first week of the season. Stanford, in my opinion, could be the best team of any in the Pac-12.
Well, and they caught Stanford at a good time. Week one, early game, you know, on the road, playing a team they thought they could just roll in there and beat. But Pat Fitzgerald's a good coach, and he's got it head in the right direction. And we'll see. We have a better idea of some of these teams. But, like, you go back to Cal and Utah on Saturday, okay? We think Cal is for real, but they barely beat Texas. And we know what Texas is. So if they go in there and beat Utah or hang with Utah, okay, Cal is definitely a legit team. Like, when good teams play good teams, that's when we get a better indication. Rather than, oh, this team's 4-0, but they really haven't played anyone.
Do you think on the Heisman front that we should be looking at Ezekiel Elliott?
No.
And I'm in agreement with you, and I'm starting to get that.
It's Fournette's to lose. If he doesn't get hurt, he's going to win it.
And that's where I'm at. You know, I keep bringing this up because people say, well, you know, you talk about the Heisman. I'm a voter, so I've got to sit here and look at this objectively. And there's no way I can look at it objectively other than the guy at LSU, because we can't say his name, in talking about our ballots. But there's not a chance that anybody else should even come close to him. Like, I've heard Jared Goff's name. Jared Goff's just a nice college quarterback.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I mean, if TCU runs the table... And
oh, you're going to start working
If TCU runs the table and the numbers continue to play out like they have so far, I mean, he's got 19 touchdowns and 3 interceptions.
Yeah, but have you seen Fournette?
I have, but I'm just saying. I mean, if TCU runs the table, goes undefeated, and LSU loses 2 games, I'm just saying, you could make that argument.
I'm sure you could.
You could make that argument. But TCU's not going to run the table, and they're not going to go undefeated, so don't worry about that.
Well, and see, I look at the SEC, and LSU has played better than I thought so far this year. And I think it's really because of Fournette. LSU's in, an advantageous situation. I haven't seen, is there anything new on South Carolina's game being moved down to LSU?
No, I haven't seen. Spurrier on one of the TV shows in the newsroom.
And Spurrier's in trouble, you know. So you look at the SEC and you say, you know, has LSU played really good competition up to this point? When they play Alabama, how's that going to work out for them? Because I think Spurrier's going to retire or be gone by the end of the year. And I think Georgia's in trouble. I think Mark Richt's in trouble at Georgia. Fans there have been patient with him for a long time. Anu Solomon did practice yesterday for U of A. He's supposed to practice again today. He'll be tested by the trainers on Thursday. Can't emphasize enough how big of a game it is for U of A against Oregon State this Saturday. Their schedule smooths out. They should beat Oregon State. They should win the following week. Their next 4 games are games you look at when they play at Colorado. They have, after that, Washington State and Washington. They should win their next 4, which sets up a showdown on November 7th with USC. All right, on the other side, we'll talk some baseball. Pedro Gomez, what a great game last night at Yankee Stadium. And he joins us today live in Pittsburgh for tonight's Cubs-Pirates playoff game. That's next, the wild card matchup. I'm Brad Sussmat. And now let's go to Pittsburgh because Pedro Gomez joins us live for a couple of minutes. I have seen Pedro all morning long on our television. Eric and I were admiring his attire, his... How many people do you have there that are like spraying you down and lathering you up with makeup and spray and your tie? And I mean, debonair, that's all I can say. It's GQ, man.
Zero. That's all self.
Zero.
Inflicted, I guess I'll say.
Zero. You know, when I started doing this, the TV show a couple weeks ago again, back at it, I went into Sephora. And of course, a 50-year-old male walking into Sephora automatically gets odd looks. You don't get that, though, because you've been doing TV forever, right? Or do you have your makeup delivered to the house?
No, I do get my own, and just a compact and maybe a little concealer. Just, boy, way more than I ever knew before TV, though. Way more than I ever knew.
Yeah, you blend your concealer.
I do.
Yeah, nice. So guys...
I know, here we are.
Guys...
talking about sports. About makeup.
That's it. That's where we are. All right. On a serious note, let's start with the Diamondbacks. They blow out Mike Harkey as their pitching coach. Did this surprise you?
You know, I guess to a degree, but the new administration, I guess, gave him a year. Like, let's see what we have here. Because, you know, La Russa, Stewart, this is their first full season. So They gave Harkey a chance, and I guess that there just wasn't a meeting of the minds when it came to the philosophy that the upper management wants for the rest of the organization. And it's funny because I am in Pittsburgh, and one of the things that general manager Neil Huntington and manager Clint Hurdle decided about 4 or 5 years ago is we are a small market club. We are not going to be able to compete for the big money free agents. So we are going to change the philosophy of the Pirates. Mm. And it's going to start at rookie ball. And basically they started telling everybody in the organization, you will only pitch on the inside part of the plate. That's all. We know that you're going to hit batters because balls will get away. That's okay. Then they in turn went to the hitters and said, look, you're going to get hit because we're going to hit people by accident. And the, you know, just the simple math is when we hit a guy, they're going to want to hit us back. So just know that this is all part of a plan. But when you look at the Pirates now, they had the second best ERA in baseball this year. Guys like Charlie Morton and Gerrit Cole and Jeff Locke, who came up through the system, they have only known one philosophy: throw on the inside half of the plate. Because if you make a mistake on the inside half of the plate, Brad, you're going to hit a batter. If you make a mistake on the outside half of the plate, it's going to get crushed. The ball will get crushed. So, you know, when you can't have the resources or don't have the resources to go out and pay $155 million for a John Lester or a David Price, let's say, who's going to be a free agent this year, you know, you've got to change your philosophy. And that's what they've done. And I think the Diamondbacks are probably going to, or have already instituted, a similar outlook. And really, if you can't go out and pay that big money, this is the way.
It's really interesting to put the correlation between the Pirates and Diamondbacks. And how much is it La Russa sitting upstairs with Dave Stewart and Dave Duncan, who's involved in this organization as well, and them just looking at Harkey and saying, we're not on the same page philosophically. I would turn it around, though, and say, boy, they had a lot of kids here this year. They didn't have very many veterans. And did he do the best that he could with what he had to work with? I don't know.
I don't know that we know that just from watching from the outside, because who knows what the internal conversations are like. But, you know, when you look at the seasons that the starting pitchers had, and really let's concentrate on the starters, because that's where you make your season,
sure,
really, is for, with the starters. You know, Patrick Corbin, coming off Tommy John surgery, made big strides, and I definitely know that the thinking is that he is going to make a big leap next year now that he's going to be so far removed from the Tommy John surgery. So there's a guy that they're absolutely counting on. But then when you look at other guys, you kind of saw guys that didn't get a lot of traction and move the ball forward maybe as much as the D-backs thought, and maybe that's where Harkey got kind of caught in between.
Well, and I have to look at Archie Bradley, too. You know, and I want to talk to you about the other game last night and the Pirates, but just the one last thought on this. When you have a prize pupil like Archie Bradley who takes the ball off the face, then we don't see him because he's having some physical ailments. Essentially, they shut him down, got him away from the game, from my view, a little bit. Maybe there was something there too.
Yeah, that might be more, though. My understanding is that might be more on Archie, and that Archie needs to step up and realize that just because you are wearing a big league uniform does not mean you're a big leaguer necessarily. You've got to really concentrate on your craft and move forward. So my understanding in conversation I had with somebody with the Diamondbacks front office is that they're more disappointed in Archie in the sense that he just did not progress himself. Not anything Mike Harkey was doing, but Archie himself. It's more internal, and Archie needs to realize that it's not a given. Just because you're the star minor leaguer doesn't mean that always translates at the big league level. You've got to also put in the work, and hopefully Bradley realizes that the work only gets more intense once you make it to the big leagues.
Pedro Gomez joining us, ESPN Baseball Insider. He is in Pittsburgh for Cubs Pirates tonight. What happens tonight from your view?
Oh, boy. This is, shaping up to be a matchup for the ages when you think of the two pitchers going. I know that everybody's talking about Jake Arrieta, and rightfully so. The second half he had after the All-Star break, the best in the history of the game after an All-Star break. When you consider the best, the number one second half ever, that tells you everything you need to know right there. But I think that getting lost in the shuffle is Gerrit Cole. We saw him out west because of the pack. He was the UCLA Golden Boy. He was the number one overall pick in 2011. And, a 19-game winner this year. And somebody who has really, really stepped up and shown that he is capable of being a very elite pitcher. And, a lot of times you see clubs that, with their first-round pick, they swing and miss sometimes. And certainly the Diamondbacks were guilty with Trevor Bauer.
Yep.
That certainly was too high of a pick to swing and miss on. The other UCLA pick that year was Gerrit Cole at number one overall, and the Pirates certainly did their homework and knew this guy has the absolute capability to be a dominant guy. So, it could be 0-0 in the eighth inning, and both these guys could be getting out of the game. It's funny because each club placed on its wild card roster, the Cubs put John Lester, and the Pirates put Nelson Francisco Liriano. And you've got to be thinking that if it is a 0-0 or 1-1 game, you could be looking at 15, 16 innings. So even though those guys are scheduled to pitch game one of the next round, you've got to get to the next round. So that's the biggest reason that you see guys like John Lester on the Cubs roster for tonight. It's if the game goes 16, yep, and we get, you know, Arrieta being Arrieta, we've got to have Lester because we might need another 5-6 innings from somebody.
Before I let you go, on the Dodgers, then, we spoke about them last week or a couple weeks ago, and you gave me the feeling that Mattingly is in a space where if they don't win, there could be a change there. I'm not putting words in your mouth on that one.
No, that's a common belief, yeah, throughout the game.
So how does he handle Kershaw? Because does Kershaw go on short rest? That's been a debate around the Dodgers. Kershaw will pitch in game one, Greinke in game two. How quickly do you bring back Kershaw to the Dodgers with that mammoth monster payroll? Do they have enough up top, and do you use Kershaw on short rest?
I think the Dodgers would be in a situation like, if they're up 2-1, maybe not. Although they still might at 2-1 because you want to just slam the door, and knowing that you would have Greinke for a game five. So I do believe that we will see Kershaw on short rest. I do believe that, no matter what, especially if they're down 2-1. But if they're up, even if they're up, yes. And I think it'll be a lot of talk about it. But when you look at the other two starters that the Dodgers will be, you know, have as potential starters in this series, no, you've got to go with Kershaw and Greinke. And if you lose, you lose with Kershaw and Greinke. But you're not going to lose with a Brett Anderson out there or somebody like that.
It's amazing they haven't, Pedro, been able to get anybody else. I'm not saying you have to have other than Kershaw and Greinke. You can't find those guys. It's amazing you have two of them on the same staff, but that there's just nobody else. That after all this money they've spent and all the moves they've made, that they're just like, nope, we only have these two guys and that's it. While the Mets are sitting there, other than Matt Harvey can't find his way to the ballpark on time, but the Mets are sitting there with a very deep, young, I'll give it that, young group that they're going to roll out against the Dodgers.
Yeah, but again, it goes to player development. Mets developed all these guys, and although Syndergaard came in the trade for R.A. Dickey, but nonetheless, he was an A-ball player at that time, so they really developed him. But yeah, you're right. It's hard to fathom an organization like the Dodgers not being able to do more than Kershaw, a fantastic draft pick, and absolutely has worked out. Greinke, a fantastic free agent signing, but you'd think that they would have a more capable or serviceable number three, and they just don't.
Yeah.
They just don't. With all that money, with almost $300 million being spent.
Safe travels. So you're in the luggage tag business right now, right? I mean, you're going to be in a different
city. I am. I'm heading to St. Louis to cover whoever wins this game with the Cards.
And from there, you don't know.
And then from there, I'll be at that series, and then I'm doing NLCS after that.
Well, good. We'll just
so
bounce around with you.
Dodgers. Yeah, Dodgers, Mets. Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
All right. Stay well. See you later. Put your concealer on.
All right, Brett.
It's Pedro Gomez with us for a couple of minutes. You can see him on SportsCenter all day, and it's like all Pedro TV today, which is great. We don't mind that. Jake Plummer joins us via Skype next, and my understanding is he has a hat that some of you old-time Sun Devils are going to look at and say, oh, man, memories. So you'll see Jake after this timeout, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Right, let's turn our attention on the college football front and a little bit of pro too. Jake Plummer joins us every week. It's good to catch up with Jake via Skype. He is in Boulder. You're wearing a hat that I'm not quite sure what to make out of it. Is it Ichabod or what does it say?
Itcob. I-T-C-O-B.
And that means exactly what?
Well, I took care of business. This was the hat that anyone that took care of business the summer of 96 on the Sun Devil team got in the weight room and took care of all your classwork and everything. If you made a certain percentage of your workouts, you got one of these beauties. And so there's a few people out there, if they see this, will know what I'm talking about. And they're all my former teammates, because unless you were on that team, you never had a chance to it Cobb.
You the tag is still on that, right? I mean, you kept that vintage? Yeah.
Keeping it vintage, man. It's from old Bruce Snyder. So, you know, something like this, we all kind of laughed at it when it came out. Like, it Cobb, I mean, what does that mean? Like you just said, but, you know, now it has a real special place in my heart and has a lot of meaning. So I put it on once in a while, and I thought, what a great time since the Sun Devils, they took care of business this weekend.
I think you probably should send like 90 hats down to Tempe and have them distributed in the locker room, because let's talk about the UCLA game. You were adamant last week that they were going to come out and that they were going to play well and that all was well. Don't jump off the bandwagon. Let's not have broken ankles all over the I-10 across Tempe. And you were dead flat right.
Well, you know, it's not that I had some prophetic, you know, vision somewhere. It's just I saw what they were doing. They were doing some good things. And I think, you know, thinking about it a lot and listening to all the talk, and I know Coach Graham is one of the most positive coaches you'll ever come across, but sometimes talking about how, you know, you're going to win the Pac-12 championship and talking about being in the playoffs and talking about this and saying that that's your goals, it's better if you just shut up and play football. We never told anybody we were going to go to the Rose Bowl. We never said we were going to be in the hunt for the national championship. But deep inside of us and inside that core group of guys, we knew we were going to be good. We knew we had a chance, I should say, to be there and be good. And it didn't come easy. It came with a lot of struggles, a lot of hard-fought wins. And I think the Devils went back to doing that. You know, play football. Don't talk the game. Let your actions be what you put out. Let You walk the walk, you know, get out there and play ball. And I think that's what they did.
Kalen Ballage, you saw in Colorado, I'm sure, in high school. Now he's come here. His touchdown run at the end of the game, Jake, was as good as any run outside of Jake Plummer scrambling around at the Rose Bowl that I've seen.
It's definitely going to be a memorable one. You know, I think we're going to see better runs from him, I believe, where he runs people over and drags more people, because I think UCLA at that time was trying to strip the ball, so they weren't really, you know, trying to bring him down necessarily. But the fact that he was doing what he did to keep going and not stop running, and then when they all those other Sun Devils came on the offense and just mashed into that whole scrum and took him into the end zone, you know, that shows that they care, that they're playing hard, that they're into it, that they want to win, that they're playing tough. And so that was an awesome way to, you know, put an exclamation point on that game. What a great thing for Kalen Ballage, because he's hungry. He's the last guy you'd want to have off the, you know, on the injury report with his, you know, mono that he had earlier in the year. I'm real excited to see what this kid can do. I think with him and DeMario Richard, you got two backs that you're really going to have a hard time to stop if you're a Pac-12 defense.
Okay, you're up there in Boulder, and Colorado's coming here, and I've taken the tact, and blow me out of the water on this if you want. ASU's in a trap game somewhat this week, because you have Utah next week at Utah, a top five team. It's on game day this week against Cal. And you can't sit there and mess around with Colorado. They're better than they've been in the past. They had Oregon at 17. Am I making too much out of this being a trap game for ASU and looking ahead?
No, not at all. And whether you say trap game or just the next game on the schedule, I mean, you got to really look at it one at a time, not worry about what's down the road. The players have to focus intense on their opponent this week and basically think of it as like, this is the last game of the year. I don't care what's next. It's right now, focus on Colorado. They will come in and make you play well. They will come in, and if you don't play well and you take them for granted thinking, oh, this is Colorado, they could sneak up and beat you. They competed, you know, really well last year against some big teams. The UCLA game comes to mind. A team like UCLA Bruins were supposed to just come in and mop up the Buffs, but the Buffs were in that game right to the end and actually probably should have won that game. So, you know, the ASU cannot take these guys lightly. They still have a lot of pride. They're playing hard. They're starting to believe in each other. Now, they're not getting the wins, but they're getting those games where they're competing now, and the young kids are believing, and that can get to be infectious. So ASU, they have to go out and be ready to play all four quarters, play a tough, feisty team that's not going to give up. They're going to keep playing. And a team that could look at ASU and say, wow, they've been up and down all year. Let's go in there and beat these guys. I mean, it's going to be one of those things. ASU can't take the team for granted. Come down here, play football. Just keep doing what you did. Play football, tackle, block, hit the guy across from you. Do what your coach says. Do more you can do. Do everything you can do to get the team in the right direction. And I think if they do that, they should come down and beat the Buffs. But don't take them lightly.
Jake Plummer joins us via Skype outside of Boulder at his home for a couple of minutes here on Brad Sesmat Football AZ. A couple stories around the Pac-12. So Miles Jack leaves UCLA, just up and leaves after he gets hurt. Psychologically, that's one of the leaders of the Bruins that says, I'm out of here. I'm moving on to the next step. Do you think there's a negative impact from somebody doing that to their program?
Of course. I think that it shows a lot of what kind of person he is. And I think that if I was a GM, I would steer clear from a guy like that who's not a team guy. He's a me guy. And, bad move. I don't know who's advising some of these young kids. I don't know who's in this kid's corner. I don't know him at all personally. Mm-hmm. I know that he's a phenomenal talent on the football field. I know that he could be even better if he learned to play every down. But for him to take off and leave his teammates like that, you know, if he was on my team, I'd have some choice words. Mm-hmm. And I'd make sure that the guys around me understood that, him leaving, that's an assault to a team and to caring and loving a guy and being able to all those that time you spent together, that time you spent in the weight room, he just up and leaves those guys when he gets hurt. I think that's a really bad move by him.
Who do you like, Cal or Utah?
Utah. Easy. I've been high on Utah. Yeah, Utah is going to go in there. Their defense is going to hit Jared Goff and hit him and hit him and hit him. Hmm. And he'll get his big plays, but that defense will not allow that Cal offense to run the ball. Cal's talking about having a little bit better balanced attack and rushing the ball well, but they haven't played a Utah defense yet. I think they're one of the best teams in the Pac-12, and now they're getting to the pub of being the best team, one of the best teams in the country. I've been on them for the last couple of years. They're well coached. They're tough. That defense led by Norris and Gianni Paul, Tevin Carter. That their front four, those big boys up front, are stout and nasty and tough. So Cal, we'll get to see if Cal goes in there and does win, then they're for real. But I really don't see them doing that. I think Utah's a few steps ahead of them right now, and they're worthy of the hype and the ranking they're receiving right now. I think Utah's a really solid football team.
As always, Jake, appreciate the time and the visit. Thanks for joining us.
Awesome, mate. Thank you, Brad. You guys have a good week and go Devils.
All right, let's straighten out your fantasy football team. Michael Fabiano, the Hall of Famer, NFL Network, NFL.com, senior fantasy analyst for everybody's got a jacked up fantasy team, because this is the week, Michael. It feels like every week it's how much longer do I stick with, but now we're at the quarter pole. So Eric and Gilbert wants to know about Eddie Lacy. How much longer does he stick with Eddie Lacy?
Stick with him. You remember last year, Brad, Lacy had a slow start to the year and then ended up being one of the better running backs in fantasy football. And he's got a really good matchup this week against the Rams, who have a talented front seven, but they've given up a boatload, let's say, of fantasy points. And in fact, you'll remember Matt Jones had a big game against them a few weeks ago, and he's kind of faded into oblivion at this point in Washington. But bottom line here is that Eddie Lacy is going to turn things around, and I believe he'll turn things around this week.
Tom in Tucson, is it time to be done with C.J. Anderson?
This is a different story. C.J. Anderson has really struggled. He's been one of the biggest busts in fantasy football so far this season. And to be quite honest with you, Ronnie Hillman is probably the guy in fantasy to own right now out of that backfield. I remember a time when having a Broncos running back was fun. Now it is a nightmare between Monte Ball last year and C.J. Anderson this year. So if you can bench C.J., even against the Raiders, I mean, this is the Raiders we're talking about, and I can't play Anderson with any kind of confidence, I'd pick up Hillman and start playing him.
Todd in Tucson. Todd Gurley, is this the start of something special? Should I play him every week?
I think so. He's awesome. And we saw the Rams take him, take it very slowly with him, and then sort of take off the training wheels last week. And he beat up a really good defense. So listen, you don't have to, I don't have to tell you about the Cardinals. That defense is very good. And Gurley completely made mincemeat of them. And a couple of things I like about him. Number one, he's a Georgia guy. Georgia has produced a whole lot of really good running backs in the National Football League. Mm-hmm. He's powerful, he's fast, he's elusive, and he's the centerpiece of that offense moving forward. So If this is the start of things to come for Gurley, which I think it is, he needs to be in your lineup, even if he's just your flex or RB2.
This is a strategy question from Mark in Sun Lakes. I'm thinking of selling high on Carson Palmer and picking up Blake Bortles. I'd like to add wide receivers. I think I could get something for Palmer. Where are you at on selling high, whether it's Carson Palmer or anybody? What do you think of this strategy from Matt?
Brilliant strategy. That's what you should be doing. You should be selling high on players unless you believe that they're going to continue to perform at a high level. For me, Carson Palmer is someone that I like to perform at a high level for most of the season. He's been great dating back to last year. Now, also keep in mind that Carson Palmer wasn't drafted to be a QB1. He was a guy who was drafted late, if he was drafted at all, which means that if you drafted intelligently, you probably already have a pretty good quarterback on your roster. Mm-hmm. So I've done this in a few of my leagues where I had, for example, picked up Tyrod Taylor off the waiver wire and I had Drew Brees, or maybe I picked up Marcus Mariota or drafted him and I already had someone like Russell Wilson. Well, I'm trying to flip that second quarterback because I have potentially another spot in my roster that's not as it's not as deep and it's not as strong. So that is something that you should always be looking to do. Selling high on a player unless you think that player is going to continue to perform, and trade from strength to improve weakness. So if you've got four really good wide receivers and you can only start two, why have two good guys on your bench? Trade one of them to improve, for example, a weak running back position.
Flip it around. Where are you at on selling low? I mean, how much time do you give somebody?
Yeah, it really depends on the player's situation. So, for example, I'm not trading Marshawn Lynch right now because his value's, it's not extremely low, but it's not as good as it was, let's say, when the season started. I'm not selling Andrew Luck right now. And in fact, I'm buying Andrew Luck because, again, his value is sort of taking a hit. Typically, I'm not someone who's going to sell low because I'm trying to get the most for the investment I made in this player in the draft. So it's more of a situation of where I'm going to try and sell high and I'm going to buy low. So I'm going to buy on Andrew Luck. I'm going to buy on Marshawn Lynch. I would have bought on someone like Jeremy Hill last week. One player I am trying to sell, and his value is a bit low right now, but it's at a weak position, is Jimmy Graham. I think I told you last week I would trade Jimmy Graham after he has a big game. He had a good game 2 weeks ago, but he is going to be a roller coaster all season long.
Steve in Prescott Valley, Amari Cooper or Julian Edelman?
Edelman. Cooper's got a really bad matchup this week. He's been so good, and it's hard to bench him. And unless you're deep at wide receiver, I wouldn't bench him. But in this case, Edelman's been awesome. I mean, this guy is a targets machine, and the Cowboys' defense is a mess. Mm-hmm. It's an absolute mess right now. Tom Brady is going to surgically pick apart that defense this weekend in the Jerry Dome. It's not going to be fun to watch if you're a Cowboys fan like me. But if you have Julian Edelman or Tom Brady on your fantasy team, you are going to be very happy.
Tony and Peoria, Ravens or Chargers defense?
I like the Ravens this week. The Ravens are actually my start defense of the week against Cleveland. I know Josh McCown looked good last week. I know Duke Johnson looked good last week. And I actually like Travis Benjamin as a sleeper slash flex this week. But the Ravens, after that win last week, and boy, what a win it was, Josh Scobie is not going to be getting any Christmas cards from the fans in Pittsburgh anytime soon, that's for sure. But I like Baltimore at home. I think this is going to be the start of good things for them. And Josh McCown, despite having a good game last week, is still Josh McCown.
A couple other questions to let you go. Michael Fabiano with us every week, the Hall of Famer, right there at the NFL Network and NFL.com. Cameron and Pine Top, Alan Hearns, what's your view of him in Jacksonville?
He's been very good. Over the last 2 weeks, he has more fantasy points than Odell Beckham Jr. and Calvin Johnson.
I mean, wow.
That's pretty good, but it's a two-game package, basically. But he has certainly earned the right to be on fantasy rosters. I mean, there's no question about that. Like, right now, there's fantasy teams, Brad, who have Roddy White on their team, and Andre Johnson. I mean, these guys are done. You know, as much as they've been fantasy superstars in the past, you got to kick these guys to the curb because their best seasons are in the rearview mirror. So I would certainly grab an Alan Hearns. I'm not saying he's a week in and week out starter. This week he's playing the Bucks. I say he's probably a three or a flex at best. And you can't expect the kind of productions he's had in the last two games, week in and week out. That's just not the offense, and that's not his role. But when you see a guy starting to produce, And you've got a guy who I consider sort of dead wood on your roster, who's not doing anything, but he's on your team for name value alone. Time to cut ties.
All right, Michael Fabiano with us. Before we let you go from NFL Network and NFL.com, who do you like this week? Who do you sit this week?
Well, let's start off at the quarterback position where I love Phillip Rivers. A great matchup against Pittsburgh. Carson Palmer's in Detroit. I'm starting him. I know they looked really good against Russell Wilson last week, but Wilson fumbled twice, and the offensive line did him no favors. You know, it's come to the point now where I have to tell people to start or sit Peyton Manning. Did you know that he's 23rd in fantasy points at quarterback right now? 23rd!
Wow.
But I do start him this week. I also start his little brother. I'm sitting Matt Stafford. I'm sitting Andy Dalton, as good as he's been, against Seattle. I'm sitting Colin Kaepernick against the New York Giants.
Why keep Colin Kaepernick
against everybody?
Yeah, why keep him at this point, Michael? Why keep Colin
Kaepernick?
Honestly,
it's name value. Yeah. It's name value. You've got four teams on a bye. You've got a bunch of quarterbacks injured, and people see the name, and they're like, you know what? I'll roll with Kaepernick. Don't do it. Running backs to start this week, Justin Forsett. Latavius Murray, you might think that's a bad matchup, but the Broncos have actually allowed more than 21 fantasy points to running backs in half their games this year. I like Carlos Hyde. I'm hoping the Giants don't blow the Niners out and the team abandons the run, but the matchup is good. I like T.J. Yeldon and Deion Lewis as well. Guys, I'm sitting. Melvin Gordon, Amir Abdullah, you'll see a trend there. I'm not a big fan of the Lions this week against Arizona. And here's an interesting one. Now, Alfred Morris has got, on paper, the best matchup of any running back in the entire league who starts for his team. But I don't know who the heck is going to play more downs in that backfield. Chris Thompson could be the sleeper this week because Atlanta's given up a lot of points to shifty, versatile running backs. So if you play Morris, play him with caution. At wide receiver, we talked about Julian Edelman. I'd start Larry Fitzgerald, Keenan Allen. Mike Evans has not looked good so far this year. I stick with him. Look at the teams the Jaguars have played. The Panthers don't have a wide receiver. The Dolphins' offense is a mess right now, and they played the Colts without Andrew Luck. So I would still play Mike Evans. Amari Cooper, we talked about. If you can afford to sit him, I would. Pierre Garçon's got a bad matchup. You may like Kendall Wright based on the numbers, but here's a little stat for you. The Buffalo Bills have held every single number one wide receiver except for Julian Edelman under 9 fantasy points, and that includes T.Y. Hilton, Jarvis Landry, and Odell Beckham Jr.
Wow, that's tough. That's strong stuff there. I like that. I like that. As always,
you know, I try to bring it for you, my friend.
I'm
trying to bring it for you every week.
A-games. That's what we're talking about. Thanks, Michael, as always.
All right, brother. Take care.